I saw a sticker on someone's car one day, and it said that God was their co-pilot. So is he your co-pilot today? Well, what is it? I heard somebody say yes. I heard some others say no. Yes. I thought about that when I saw it, and I saw it on some other cars as you go along, and I thought, you know, that sticker needs to be replaced with one that just says, Jesus is my pilot. Because we really don't know which way to go. And for him to be the co-pilot means that he's just going along for the ride. Well, Jesus doesn't just go along for the ride. And it just made me think, well, what kind of attitude are we really portraying to profess to be saved and sanctified, but Jesus is my co-pilot? You know, the pilot has control and command, and he doesn't relinquish that unless there's some reason that he can't operate and function properly, and then the co-pilot would take over. Well, you know, we already know we can't make it on our own. We can't direct our steps. So it's somewhat like another songwriter said. He said he was sitting in the front seat, trying really hard to be the driver, thinking he was making real good time, but always winding up the late arriver. And then he changed and said, but now I'm sitting in the back seat, and I find it is a very great relief. And he was leaving all the driving to the chief. So he was leaving it to Jesus, and now he realized, I don't have to struggle with this, and I can relax, if you will, and place my confidence in him, and he'll help us along the way. So it's nice to have the pilot leading us, flying us, guiding us, however you want to describe it. I was thinking the other day about the Lord, and even today as the sister spoke about his meekness and how we are to have that, it should cause us to be thankful that Jesus is meek. I believe in her description, she pointed out that it meant being gentle with authority. You know, has the authority, but is gentle with it. Won't crush us. He takes into account, and when she described that, I thought about David when he said, you know my frame, that I'm flesh. You take that into account. And we can appreciate that, and should appreciate it as we go along the way. And yet in all of that meekness, in that love that the Lord has, in his compassion, it just made me consider that God is the God of the second chance. Every person that has walked upon the face of this earth from Adam on has had at least a second chance with the Lord. There are some things in life that most of the time will not give you a second chance. And I've talked often about the work that we did, but one of the things they always warned us about is that electricity most of the time won't give you a second chance. So they would tell us you can't afford to make that first mistake. Now there have been some who have, and they have had to pay dearly for it. We had a employee, he wasn't at our plant, but he got electrocuted. Did something he wasn't supposed to do. Something they'd been warned over and over and over again not to do, but his foreman told him to do it, and he did it. They had done it in the past, and people had gotten by. But this time, when he did what he did, the electricity grabbed him, and it wouldn't turn him loose. And it went through his hand, through his shoulder, down through his knee that was on the ground, and it blew a hole in his knee and a hole in the ground. Now, all these muscles back up in your shoulder, they had to take out, because that was all just cooked. You see, it didn't give him another chance. And I think also where we worked, you think about being electrocuted. But in this instance, the electrical foreman was working on a breaker, and something touched that shouldn't have, and he had a little explosion right there in his face. Now, it did not burn him, but the intense heat started causing his throat to swell up inside and close off his air passage. Well, see, you can have enough heat generated with electricity there that just the heat from that can cause your throat to close off and you just suffocate. And it turned out that he had some trouble breathing because it was affecting him that way. It didn't close off completely, but he gave everybody quite a scare. Some things just don't give you a second chance, especially if you take it lightly. And I told someone, I said, I've taken notes since we've been out here that when it rains a little bit, I said, I've never heard of so many cars and trucks turning and rolling. And it's obvious people just don't slow down. And you might get by sometimes, but you can get yourself in some real trouble before you know it. Yet the Lord has been merciful to us and has been merciful many a time. Really, the Lord gives us more than the second chance. Probably, and sometimes would be justified not to. But in His mercy, in His meekness, in His long-suffering, He does. And we want to just briefly consider some who were blessed in that way and maybe consider somewhat why they were blessed that way. In Mark, the 16th chapter, I want to start with the first verse. And when the Sabbath was passed, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, had bought sweet spices that they might come and anoint Him. Speaking of Jesus, very early in the morning, the first day of the week, they came unto the sepulchre at the rising of the sun. And they said among themselves, who shall roll us away the stone from the door of the sepulchre? And when they looked, they saw that the stone was rolled away, for it was very great. And entering into the sepulchre, they saw a young man sitting on the right side, clothed in a long white garment, and they were affrighted. And he saith unto them, be not affrighted. Ye seek Jesus of Nazareth, which was crucified. He is risen. He is not here. Behold the place where they laid Him. But go your way, tell His disciples and Peter that He goeth before you into Galilee. There shall ye see Him, as He said unto you. You know the story. Peter was the one who seemingly would speak before he thought. And he told the Lord, I'll not deny you. Everybody else might do so, Lord, but I'm going to be right there, side by side, fighting with you. Got my sword handy, and I'm ready to die if that's what it's going to take. When those soldiers came, he pulled out his sword, and he whacked off the man's ear. And the Lord told him, put your sword away. He healed the man's ear right there. You know, as a side note, I've always wondered why those people, when they came to take Jesus and they saw what He did, I always wondered, why did that not make them think differently about what they were coming to do? Now, I suppose you could explain it off that they were soldiers, they were given orders, and soldiers are taught to obey their orders regardless of the circumstances, and they were just carrying out their orders. But I've always wondered why that didn't change somebody's viewpoint at that point in time. But you know, the story progressed on. Peter was bold enough, I'm going to pull my sword out and start fighting. The Lord didn't even have to tell him to. But now, later on, in that time frame, Christ is taken on in, being taken before the high priest. And Peter's warming himself by the fire with some of the other people. And the little damsel says, you're one of them. And he couldn't fight that. No, I'm not. And he denied the Lord thrice. And the cock crowed, and all that the Lord had to do was look at him. And he knew he'd been had. But you know, Peter, as you see here, was given another chance. And the Lord was merciful enough and compassionate enough that when the angel said, go back and tell the disciples that he is risen, and be sure you tell Peter. Yes, amen. I believe that was for Peter's benefit, for him to know that Jesus hasn't cast you off into the junk pile heap. He still has a concern for you. He wants you to know that he is risen. He wants you to know especially that he is risen. And I thought about how that when Peter recognized what he had done, it says that he went out and he wept bitterly. And to me, when I look at that, I consider that he owned up to his own deed. He didn't try to sit there and just say, well, you know, everybody else left him, so I'm no worse than them. I at least followed him. The others, they scattered and ran. He could have tried to justify himself that way, but he did not. He acknowledged his failure, and he turned to God. And you know, even throughout this meeting, we have heard it said a number of times, we need to humble ourselves. We need to acknowledge where we are. Whatever the case is, however the Lord touches us, we need to acknowledge that. We always need to acknowledge that. And in those times, it's not for us to try to justify why I'm the way I am. It's just time to say, that's me. And turn to God, just as Peter did. And the Lord gave him another chance. He took him back. The Lord is a merciful God, a compassionate God. And he blessed Peter. And we find it in the second chapter of Acts. Peter's back in action. The 14th verse says, but Peter standing up with the 11, lifted up his voice and said unto them, ye men of Judea and all ye that dwell at Jerusalem, be this known unto you and hearken to my words. Now I'm going to drop down to verse 22. And this is Peter yet talking to these people during this time. Ye men of Israel, hear these words. Jesus of Nazareth, a man approved of God among you by miracles and wonders and signs, which God did by him in the midst of you, as ye yourselves also know. Him being delivered by the determinate counsel and foreknowledge of God, ye have taken, and by wicked hands have crucified and slain, whom God hath raised up, having loosed the pains of death, because it was not possible that he should be holden of it. Here at a time, the Lord told him, you're going to deny me. And he says, I'm not going to do it. He thought he was stronger than he was. He maybe thought he was closer to the Lord, and that, you know, I love you, Lord, and I wouldn't do that. But then he found out he wasn't quite where he thought he was. But the Lord blesses him as he turns back to him. And now we find him standing before some of these same people, and he's telling them, you are the ones that crucified this Christ. Before, he couldn't even acknowledge that I'm one of his disciples. Now he's standing up telling them, you crucified him and you did it wickedly. Well, when we turn to the Lord can bless us. Not so much for us to get up and maybe tell someone else just where they are, but he will bless us to fill the place that he has for us and to fill it, fulfill it prayerfully, faithfully, and dutifully. We'll be found then carrying out that which the Lord would have us to do as we go along the pathway of life. In Luke, the 15th chapter, you've heard it many times about the prodigal son, starting with the 17th verse. And when he came to himself, he said, how many hired servants of my father's have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, bring forth the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, Bring hither the fatted calf and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. This prodigal son thought he knew how to live his life. He knew what to do. And it always amazes me that he thought he knew what to do and yet had to go tell his dad, give me some money so I can go live out on my own. You know, if he really knew how to handle his life, you would think he would have decided, well, I'll go make my own and I'll do my own. But his father gave it to him. And how much is that like we have been in times past? I'm going to live my life, and the Lord has yet given us breath and strength and health to go do what we think we want to do. But you know, he got out there, and the money ran out. The friends, so-called friends, all left. Now he's sitting there trying to feed the swine and looking at what they're eating and tempted to eat that. And he begins to think about some things. Begins to weigh it out and consider it. And he recognizes that my dad's servants are living better than I am. They have bread enough and to spare. They've got some left over and I have nothing. Now he could have sat there, as it seems people are prone to do in this day and time when it seems like life has dealt them some setbacks, and they just sit down and quit. And they begin to maybe blame others for why I'm in the situation I'm in. And they get depressed. And they're like, well, there's just no use and there's no hope. And you can try to reason with them and you can't get them to do any different. I just saw in the paper here recently, yesterday I believe, where somewhere down in Los Angeles they were going to move out and wipe out a homeless place there where some of the homeless people had been living. And they said, well, these people had been offered shelter in another place, and only four people accepted that offer for shelter somewhere else. And so they said, well, the others are, as they use the word, shelter resistant. See, that's some more of that word playing. You know, let's just put it the way it was. They was just stubborn, and they just did not want to go. But many times we can be that way, and yet we'll blame someone else for our situation. And when they try to help us, we'll push it aside. Maybe they give us some advice and we won't follow it. And we'll just kind of keep going along till we get ourselves in some good deep trouble. And then we want somebody to pray us out of it. But this young man, he could have been like that. He could have just said, well, life is just against me. The people are all against me. The ones I thought were my friends, they look at them, they've left me, and now they're not helping me out. He could have been mad at them. He could have been angry at them. And people are doing that in this day and time. But you know, he considered where he was. He thought about what he had done, and he recognized that I've done wrong. I have done wrong. Not the people that helped me spend my money and left me high and dry. Not the ones who maybe swindled me out of some of it, trying to play like they were my friend when they weren't. He didn't go through any of that. Or if he did, he refused to accept that as the reason for him being where he was. And so he considered where he was, didn't allow all of this stuff to affect him to the extent that he was not honest with himself. And he finally just acknowledge that I'm perishing. I'm dying. I'm going to be lost. And so he begins to make some decisions. I'm going to go see my father. Don't know if he'll take me back. And really, the way he left, his father could have had him put in jail. Their custom back then is that the child could ask for his money, for his inheritance. And by their customs, if the father had been abusive or wasn't really dealing with him fairly while he was raising him up, the child could request it, and by their custom, the father was required to give it to him. But if he makes this request and there's really nothing wrong, then he could have been brought in before the rulers and the young man would have been in trouble. So when he got his money, he got on out of there. Now, he could have figured that, well, if I go back to my father, he's going to be upset with me. And then I've got all these other things that I'm going to have to meet. But he said, I will arise. I'm going to go to my father. And I'm going to let him know that I've sinned against heaven and before thee. He was recognizing the whole picture. I've sinned against God. I didn't do what the Lord would have me to do. And I've trespassed against you, Father. I did not respect you. I did not deal with you fairly. I made some demands that I should not have made. And so he arose and did just that. He acted upon what he had determined to do. Now, I've seen times where some have said, well, I want to get saved. I know I need to get saved. But you never see them arise. It's almost as if they're waiting for the Lord to come down on them and just physically overtake them and start making their feet walk one foot in front of the other until they get to somewhere where the Lord can deal with them. But it's not going to work that way. You and I are going to have to acknowledge the Lord when he comes our way. Even when we're saved and sanctified, he's going to deal with us. He's going to check us. And it's for us to acknowledge just where we are. And the Lord is faithful to forgive us when we need forgiveness. He's faithful to strengthen us in those areas of weakness when we acknowledge him and we begin to work and labor there. And he will cause us to become a better person as a result of it. He will cause us to get more close to him. And you know, if we would do that, we'd take care of a lot of trouble before it would ever get started. This young man went ahead and returned. And you know, he also could have done, and so many do it nowadays, you know, young people are smart. But they seem to want to get by the easy way. And if this young man was living in this day and time, I would not have been surprised if when he came to his father and he said, you know, started to say what he's going to say, but somehow he sensed that my father's happy to see me. He came running out and he's thrown his arms around my neck and he's kissed me. Well, he wouldn't be doing that if he was mad. So maybe I'll just not say nothing and I'll just play this along and see how things work out. Then I won't have to embarrass myself and humble myself and acknowledge that I was wrong. He could have done that. And it seems like young people in this day and time like to do that. You know, if I can just kind of play it off and everything's okay, well, you know, they're not mad. I don't need to say anything. We need to go beyond that. You know, I've seen times where someone was involved in something and I happened to be there. And so then they was wanting me to help them get out of the situation. And somebody had come by. They didn't want that person to come by at that point in time. And they was waiting for somebody else. And I thought, I don't know what to tell you. You're just going to have to deal with them. And nothing I can do. And I didn't even hardly know the person, you know. But once they got through it, and I kind of mentioned, said, well, they seem a little bit hurt. Oh, they'll get over it. They'll be all right. Well, you know, we can do that with each other right here amongst the church. Oh, it'll be all right, you know, because we really don't want to go back and straighten it up. But we can't do that. We can't play it off that way. And this young man possibly could have, maybe he even thought about it, but he did not follow through that way. He had determined, I'm going to go and acknowledge what I've done, tell my father that I was wrong, and all I want him to do is to make me a servant. If I could just get back in that much. Now, we got others in this day and time can do things, and then when you seemingly try to work through it, they want you and will almost demand you put me right back up there on the throne I was on as soon as you get through. But see, this young man didn't do that. He acknowledged who he was. And when he came, he actually followed through on what he had decided to do. He went ahead and repented and acknowledged to his father that I'm not worthy to be your son. I didn't conduct myself in a way that is comely. I did not conduct myself in a way that fits how you raised us up. So I'm not worthy to be in that place. Just let me be one of your hired servants. But because his father was compassionate,
He restored him back to where he was. When he told him, bring the garments and put on him, that was like a birth garment that signified to them that he was dead, but now he is alive again. Put the ring back on him to show that he's been restored to his place of honor. Put shoes on his feet to let him know you are free to go just as you were before you left here. The Lord, the Father blessed him, and you know the Lord blesses us that way too. You know, we do some things that sometimes, even in our repenting, in our getting, if you will, squared up with the Lord, we still feel unworthy. And sometimes it's hard for us to even forgive ourselves. And yet the Lord will forgive us and just free us to go forth and be true to Him. Let's look at one other. In Jonah, the first chapter, first verse. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up to flee unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord, and went down to Joppa, and he found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare thereof, and went down into it to go with them unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Given a commission, and he heads in the opposite direction. And goes down in the ship trying to get away from the presence of the Lord. Now, I suspect that Jonah realized he couldn't just get away from God. But the Jews had the thought back then that God only worked where they were. And so if you went away from there, well, God's not going to work in these other heathen nations. And so perhaps he felt like, well, if I go over here someplace else, God won't talk to me over there. And I'll be able to ignore it and not have to go do what he wants me to go do. But you know what happened? Jonah got arrested. He got caught. And the captain had to come down and wake him up and more or less say, what you doing sleeping at a time like this? Call on your God. We're about to lose our lives and you're down here sleeping. Everybody's calling on their gods and nothing's happening. And maybe if you call on yours, we might get out of this, so you need to wake up. We heard that we need to wake up. Well, if we wake up, then we need to be calling on the Lord too. May the Lord help us. But we find here that when things kept going on, Jonah finally admitted to them that he was the reason for all their trouble. And they was wondering, well, now, if you're our problem, if you're the one that's causing this, what are we going to do? And he told them, well, just cast me overboard.
Do we have grace enough to acknowledge when we are the cause of the problem and propose the solution? That gets kind of difficult. You know, there's been times when I've dealt with my children and you see that there's a problem here. And then I'd ask them, all right, now what do you suggest I do to punish you and take care of this situation? And I don't do that to torture, but I found that it gets a little difficult for them to just say, well, you know, do this or do that or do the other. But my intention then is that maybe they'll begin to think, next time I don't want to be caught in this place, because if he's going to ask me that, I don't want to have to try to answer that question. And I sure don't like telling him what my punishment should be and then he carry it out for me. Well, you know, we're all like that. But Jonah owned up to his situation. And we need to be honest enough. We need to be meek enough. We need to be humble enough to own up to where we are sometimes. And the Lord help us to move forward from that point. So they did what Jonah suggested. And in the second chapter, the first verse, we pick up where Jonah is still in trouble. Then Jonah prayed unto the Lord his God out of the fish's belly and said, I cried by reason of mine affliction unto the Lord, and he heard me. Out of the belly of hell cried I, and thou heardest my voice. For thou hast cast me into the deep, in the midst of the seas, and the floods compassed me about. All thy billows and all thy waves passed over me. Then I said, I am cast out of thy sight, yet I will look again toward thy holy temple. The waters compassed me about, even to the soul. The depths closed me round about. The weeds were wrapped about my head. I went down to the bottoms of the mountains. The earth with her bars was about me forever. Yet hast thou brought up my life from corruption, O Lord my God. When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord, and my prayer came in unto thee, into thine holy temple. They that observe lying vanities forsake their own mercies. But I will sacrifice unto thee with the voice of thanksgiving. I will pay that I have vowed. Salvation is of the Lord. And the Lord spake unto the fish, and it vomited out Jonah upon the dry land. Now you know what Jonah did after that. He got to running. But I considered that, and I've been even told, I was talking with someone and trying to, as best as I could, entreat them to go ahead and get saved. And they said, well, I don't want to turn to the Lord because I'm in trouble. Maybe you've never heard anybody say that before, but I've heard it a few times. I've heard it when we were as young people growing up, and some say, well, I don't want to come to the Lord when I'm in trouble, because that looks like I'm just taking advantage of him. But how many times did Israel come to the Lord, and usually what was going on when they came? They were in trouble. Well, Jonah turned, taken by that fish that had been prepared, weeds wrapped around his head, and I just can't quite imagine what that was like. You know, these prisons nowadays almost in some aspects seem like country clubs. And these men get to where they don't want to leave. I have a cousin who, when he got out, he immediately did something where they put him back in, and he's still in there today. Well, Jonah had a little different viewpoint of his prison. Weeds wrapped around his head, I suspect it was smelling. And he probably thought he'd never get out of there again. Claustrophobic. Things just closed right in on him. Waters, he said, pressed him right to his soul. He was in dire straits. But yet in all of that, because of that affliction, because of the situation he was in, he cried unto the Lord. The Lord will yet give us an opportunity if we'll turn and call upon him. And as we go along the pathway and you look at those who maybe have gone back, and you keep praying for your loved ones and they don't seem to hardly respond at all. You sometimes, at least I have wondered if they're even thinking at all in any kind of way about the Lord. And one in particular, I just finally concluded I don't think there's any thought there about getting saved again, about God. Well, I found out that there was, but you know, the way I found out was that they had been doing some drinking, and then they called me on the phone, and they began to start talking. And later on, I heard them say, well, a drunk man will speak a sober man's mind. So I thought, well, there's still something down in there working. I can't give up praying now. So let us be encouraged to keep praying, continue to carry the burden. They may leave out of our sight, may not even know where they are, but continue to pray. Because he's still the God of a second chance. He's still able to somehow reach them. And sometimes what we might think would reach them,
it'll be something far less. I still think about it from time to time that after all of the messages my wife's grandmother had heard growing up, all of the different ones she'd heard preach, yet all this time she'd gone on for years unsaved. All of the time she'd come to meeting there in Wichita, still unsaved. And you know what got her? We had dinner over at our house one day, holiday I guess it was, and we usually all would get together, and she was there, and my mother-in-law just asked me and my sisters and brothers to sing a couple of songs before she left. So I'm getting ready to go home, and it was actually some of them standing at the door and said, but I want to hear this song and this song. So we sung those songs, and then everybody hit it on. And Grandma told me later, she said, you know, I got to thinking that if the Lord was to come right now, all of y'all would get to go up to heaven and I would be left behind. Just that little bit was what got her. When the meeting came, she took a beeline to the altar and she was 77, 78, something like that.
Yes, that's right. She's 80.
She's 99. She was 80 years old. And to be honest, she made such a quick move up there till I wasn't sure that I saw what I thought I saw. Because I just saw, you know, you standing there singing, and all of a sudden in your peripheral vision, you see it. And I was like, was that Grandma that went up there? And of course, everybody's standing up, and I'm just kind of back. So now I'm standing up on my toes trying to look between everybody. Is that Grandma down at the altar? And when you saw that, yeah, that's Grandma, I said, oh, I know something getting ready to happen now.
And she got saved.
And you know something else? You haven't had to tell her, okay, now, Grandma, you got saved and you need to get sanctified and you need to get baptized.
She let them know, I want it all. And she moved quick and got sanctified and then wanted to know when she could get baptized. Now, see, the elderly woman at that time, and it was cold there in Wichita. And, you know, you would kind of think, well, but she get baptized and then, you know, get dressed and go out in that cold. She got baptized. And you don't have to tell her, well, you know, we like to hear babes holler. You know, if Ethan never, Brother Tavis, a little boy, if he never made a sound, everybody would get concerned. You know what she would do? She would tell you sometimes. She'd stand up. You don't have to tell her, well, you know, prayer meeting come, you can testify.
She said, I believe it's my duty to report unto you where I am. And I want to let you know I'm still saved. And I'm still sanctified. And I'm going on. You have to wonder if she still got something. She get up and get to move. And she don't talk a whole lot. But she let you know, I'm still saved. And she sit back down. Later on, she said, well, I feel like I ought to do a little more. So she start praying in prayer meeting. And I look at that sometimes and I think, now, this 80-year-old woman done come in here and she done started going for the Lord. And we got some that's been around here for years, and I can't remember the last time I heard them pray in prayer meeting. Some of them, I can't remember the last time they testified. But I do know that it was long enough that it's been over a year. I knew that for a fact. And here she come in and took right on off. You know, I always thought, well, Grandma's kind of proud. I don't know if she'll get saved. She's going to probably miss out. But somehow the Lord gave her a second chance. And she took it and started running, and she's still going. May the Lord keep us encouraged to keep praying. But also, as we look upon this, you consider that Jonah told him, I'm the man. He owned up to who he was, what he had done, how it was wrong, and told him what they needed to do to get the problem taken care of. Now, wouldn't that be something if when we came to the altar, we would tell those who were working with us, well, here's what I've done, here's how I'm wrong, and here's what I need to do, and if you can give me some more counsel, I'll take that too. It would sure make it a lot easier. But you see, Jonah did that, and he turned unto the Lord, and the Lord spoke to the fish and parked him right there on dry land. And that was a real blessing from the Lord. But we don't want to take God's blessings for granted. He is the God of the second chance, third, fourth, and fifth chance, and many more. But we can't take him for granted. And I've seen the time, and I even told someone once, I said, you know, you have seen some things with your parents. You've even experienced some things yourself while being saved. And now you're back out there doing this and that and the other. You're not going to get a chance like your father got. You're not going to get that. And I believe the Lord put it on me to tell them that. And I told them, you better straighten up real quick. And if you're just going to persist in this way, then you need to go see the attorney and get your will and everything taken care of. Because you're going down the path of sure destruction. In the fifth chapter of Daniel, the 18th verse, we find someone who had saw a number of things over a period of time, but failed to take heed. Daniel, the fifth chapter, starting with the 18th verse. O thou king, the most high God gave Nebuchadnezzar, thy father, a kingdom and majesty and glory and honor. And for the majesty that he gave him, all people, nations, and languages trembled and feared before him. Whom he would, he slew, and whom he would, he kept alive, and whom he would, he set up, and whom he would, he put down. But when his heart was lifted up, and his mind hardened in pride, he was disposed from his kingly throne, and they took his glory from him. And he was driven from the sons of men, and his heart was made like the beast, and his dwelling was with the wild asses. They fed him with grass like oxen, and his body was wet with the dew of heaven, till he knew that the Most High God ruled in the kingdom of men, and that he appointed over it whomsoever he will. And thou, his son, O Belshazzar, hast not humbled thine heart, though thou knewest all this, but hast lifted up thyself against the Lord of heaven, and they have brought the vessels of his house before thee,
And thou and thy lords, thy wives and thy concubines have drunk wine in them, and thou hast praised the gods of silver and gold, of brass, iron, wood, and stone, which see not, nor hear, nor know. And the God in whose hand thy breath is, and whose are all thy ways, hast thou not glorified. You know the ending of the story. He was weighed in the balance and found wanting. His kingdom was numbered, and it was going to be taken from him. And it did not take long for this to take place. But this man had the privilege, had the opportunity, had the advantage of seeing what happens when you stand up against the Lord and you fail to glorify him in your life. When you fail to acknowledge him, he saw what happened to his father. He saw how he had been humbled. He even got to see how he had been raised back up. But yet after seeing all of that, he did not take heed to it. He ignored it. He walked on by it. He did not take heed to it. And the result was when it came to him, there was no second chance. You know, we have a great privilege to be able to read God's Word, to be able to have it expounded to us by those that are laboring for the Lord, and by even those that we have the blessing of being around. When we come to prayer meeting and you hear someone testify about something they had gotten out of God's Word, or maybe someone is exhorting, or whatever the case may be. Maybe it's just in meditating upon the songs, and you begin to get the message from that song. That's a great blessing. But when we fail to take heed to that, and when we fail to glorify God in our lives, we're getting in the same plane as Belshazzar. And in that particular instance, we may or may not get another opportunity. The Lord is merciful, but we heard yesterday that we need to behold his goodness and his severity. I've often pondered and wondered, do we really believe God? Do we really believe him? I know we say we do. I know we tend to act like we do. But do we really believe him when he sends forth his word in whatever form to warn us, to stir us, to dig about us? Do we really believe him? I'm persuaded that to really believe means that we will respond. Amen. We will act upon that which comes. It doesn't always mean that every single time we'll just be here lining the altar every Sunday. Like, well, I'd rather have riches. You can't get any richer than this. Some feel like they would rather have their own way, but you can't find a better way than this. And when we consider what the Lord has, we have the best if we'll only follow it. He is the God of a second chance. When we find that we've maybe stumbled, even as you've heard, I'm sure you've been encouraged. Probably everyone in here has learned to ride a bicycle at some point in time. And you have probably skinned your knee and fell off of it a time or two. And somebody was there saying, but try it again. Get on it again. You was doing all right. Might have really not been doing too good, but they're encouraging you. You was doing all right, and you just about got it. You get on, and maybe you get your feet up on both of the pedals, and you can't even go before you done turn the wheel too sharp. Now you're falling over again. And you know, sometimes they'll get in behind you and say, well, I'm going to hold you up. You just pedal, and pretty soon they get to pushing you along, and oh, you got it now. And they back off, and you just pedaling. Next thing you know, you're really peddling and you can go on without anybody's help. You know, the Lord wants to encourage us to keep pressing. Amen. When we find we've stumbled, keep trying. Yes. He'll help us to keep going. He'll boost us. He'll help push us along. And he'll tell us we've got it. It won't be of our own strength. But he'll help us where we begin to see, you know, I used to not be able to deal with that, and now I can. Yes. I used to not be able to do this, but now I can. Not that it's in our own strength, it's just the Lord. And you know something else? I mentioned to some of the people there at the rehab center there at Acton. I told them, I said, well, just remember that as you leave this place, I said, Brother Herbert is pretty faithful to put in requests for all of you that are here and for those of you that are leaving. So just remember, wherever you're going, if things begin to get tight, you're beginning to wonder about maybe going another way, just remember there's somebody praying for you to make it. And it made me think of the songwriter. He said, don't give up. Try again. This time you can make it. Don't you see? All heaven wants you to win. Gather up all your courage together and make a final stand, and I know that you can make it this time. He said, you may be scarred, you may be bruised from trying so many other things, but I know through Jesus that you can win. For the price was paid in full when the spikes went down in the wood, and I know that you can make it this time. There is a power that has come to help you stand. It is the Spirit of God sent down to me. If you will just trust His grace, if you will just trust His name, your life He will rearrange and give you a reason to try again. The prodigal son had a reason to go back. My father's servants have bread enough and to spare. If I could just be one of them, I'm going to have more than enough. He'd come to realize, I don't need all of the riches that I did have, but I'll still have more than enough. And he had a reason to go back and try again. We have that same reason today because our God is so merciful, so kind, so compassionate, so long-suffering. And we can go back to Him and keep trying. Amen. And not only that, when we look at others that we're carrying burdens for, we can keep going back and we can tell them, try again. Go back and try again. All of heaven wants you to win. There's somebody there that's cheering you on. If nobody else down here on earth is cheering you, the angels and all of the other souls in heaven are cheering you on. And they're wanting you to make it. You've got all of them at your beck and call, if I can say it that way. Not that you can call upon them, but what I mean, they are always wanting for us to go forward. And I believe they always keep hope. Get up and try again. May the Lord help us to prove faithful to Him. Amen. And always remember, He's compassionate, the God of the second chance.